Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Rapid City held municipal elections yesterday. What happened to funding for the Minnewichoni Water Project? And how devastating is the impact of flooding in Pennington County? Our Dakota political junkie, Seth Tapper, joins us today from the Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Rapid City studio with some different items for our discussion. Seth, hey, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You have been relatively busy, it seems. Let's start with Minnewichoni and tell us a little bit about, why now? Why are you working on this project now? Because there's a lot of history behind it.
Yeah, so this dates back a couple of years. We got a tip in the newsroom about some concerns about water quality on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And I was kind of puzzled about it at the time because I thought, how could this be? They have the Minnewichoni system, and that was, as far as I knew, supposed to have solved all the water problems of quality and availability on Pine Ridge. And in looking into that particular tip, we learned that some of the concerns about water quality weren't as grave as perhaps we were led to believe. But I did learn from a tipster at the time who told me, don't you realize that only Pine Ridge only gets half of its water from the Missouri River through this pipeline? And I thought, no, that can't be true. This was like a $500 million project. The whole point was to bring Missouri River water to Pine Ridge, and you're telling me they only get half of their water from it? And started looking into it, and that is true. And I started learning a lot more about it. And it was something that I had set aside as a story idea. I knew it was going to be a lot of work because this is a project that goes back 30 years to sort of dig into this and find out all the issues and problems with it. But eventually I was able to get a grant from the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which is a nonprofit that sort of bought me some time to work on this. And that's why I brought it out recently when we did. And it was, I should say, it was co-published in the Guardian first, and then we published it in the Rapid City Journal.
All right, so let's talk about the history, because we're working toward answering this question of why does it matter, which we'll get to in just a minute. But let's go back some 30 years, and what was the problem then that was trying to be solved? And let's walk people through some of the key points and missteps, really. What was the problem that needed to be solved back 3 decades ago?
It's probably hard for people to understand this now, but, up until, 30 years ago or 20 years ago, a lot of western South Dakota and the rural areas, you really didn't have much in the way of rural water. In other words, pipes bringing water to people's homes. You had individual wells, you had cisterns, you had people, having water hauled in. This was, white people, native people across western South Dakota. And so there was a drive after the dams were built, on the Missouri River, in the 1940s and onward in that era. There was a drive for many years to try to get some of that water in pipelines over to western South Dakota. And so what's now called the Lyman-Jones West River system, which is, as the name implies, Jones County and Lyman County and some of the some other areas there in western South Dakota. There were a lot of people really active in trying to get a pipeline built. And this was in the 70s and 80s. And long story short, they were never able to get any money put together for it. They went to Congress several times, couldn't get the money until finally somebody stumbled on the idea of let's include the Pine Ridge Reservation in this. And that's how the project got going. In 1988, Congress passed legislation that was introduced by then Representative Tim Johnson, Democrat from South Dakota, to fund this Minnewichoni pipeline to bring Missouri River water to Pine Ridge and also to this West River Lyman-Jones service area along the way to Pine Ridge.
All right. So why, I'm going to jump in here for clarity. Why did it matter that they included Pine Ridge? What was the significance of including that population and actually getting the legislation moving forward?
Well, I interviewed former Congressman Larry Pressler, who was in the Senate at the time and also advocated for the original bill. And he told me, flat out that, they had to have Native Americans in this bill to get it through. For the people in the West River Lyman-Jones service area who wanted this project, that if it was his words, or if it was just going to be white people, They couldn't get the bill passed. And so the federal government has a responsibility through treaties and case law to provide an adequate source of water to federally recognized Native American reservations. And so when you bring Pine Ridge in, all of a sudden it becomes a federal responsibility and becomes a lot easier to get a bill through Congress. Also because it was a lot easier to show the need on Pine Ridge, whereas, you know, in western South Dakota, a lot of people had bad wells or, you know, problems with insufficient water. On Pine Ridge, you had problems with people not having any water at all in many cases. So it became a lot easier to get the bill passed when Pine Ridge was included.
All right, so problem solved. You don't have a story.
Right.
Except there's a series of things that start to unravel, which probably is no surprise to anyone either. What went wrong? What's, you know, how did things unfold from there?
Right. Well, when the bill was passed, you know, the project was given a Lakota Sioux name, Miniwichoni, which is often translated as water is life. And the first purpose stated in the bill was that this bill is to bring Missouri River water to Pine Ridge because the Missouri River is the best and most affordable source of water for the reservation. But in the project's first few years, they decided to add the Rosebud and Lower Brule reservations into the project. And it was originally only supposed to cost $100 million, but as we all know and can guess with large federal public works projects, it got way behind schedule. It started costing a lot more money. There were myriad problems. There were a couple of audits that revealed some misspent funds and problems, especially on Pine Ridge and on Lower Brule. And I should note that each of the project sponsors, each of the three tribal governments and the West River Lyman Jones water system were all in charge of taking the federal dollars and basically building their own components of the system. And so to make a very long story short, it was only supposed to take 7, 8, 9 years to build this $100 million, ended up taking about 25 years and $488 million. And it took several acts of Congress to keep the project alive and add more money to it. And then finally, when the last extended sunset date for the project expired in 2013, it turns out there were several components on the tribal ends of the project that never got done.
Hmm. All right. So even getting contracts on tribal land is more expensive, or the bids come in higher for different places. Why is that?
That was I had a couple sources tell me that when I was asking why did this cost so much more than it was supposed to, one of the reasons cited was that when you get contractors and you want them to go out and work on Pine Ridge or on Rosebud, for example, those are very remote areas. It costs a lot for contractors to mobilize to get out there. These are also areas that are controlled by tribal governments, which often don't operate in the same way as non-tribal governments and can be confusing and frustrating for contractors who aren't familiar with how tribal governments work or how tribal politics work. And there may have been obviously some racism involved in that too, but for a lot of different reasons. I was told by several sources that you know, bids came in higher on the reservations than had been originally anticipated.
Talk a little bit about some of the people who are trying to, you know, to keep the project alive. Does Tim Johnson follow this his entire career? How does his leaving the Senate impact the project?
He did, yeah. I mean, he came in and I believe it was his first term when he was a U.S. representative in the late 80s when this bill got passed. And of course, he became one of the most successful politicians in South Dakota history. He served in the House and then transitioned over, ended up beating Larry Pressler and unseating him to win a seat in the Senate. And then in 2013, he had a medical issue, arteriovenous malformation, which was basically like a stroke-like episode where he had a hemorrhage in the brain that left him with problems with his speech and mobility. And that happened in 2013 just as the Miniwichoni project was sort of winding down and running out of money. And in his last few years in the Senate before he retired, he did try to win some more federal funding to finish out some of the aspects of the project that weren't done on the reservations. But he wasn't successful in doing that. And one of the reasons was Tim Johnson was sort of the king of earmarks for South Dakota. Throughout his career, he really proudly had this practice of winning earmarks or basically funding specially designated in much broader appropriation bills for projects back in South Dakota, and that's how Minnewachoni got quite a bit of its funding. Well, earmarks were banned by Congress. There was a backlash against earmarks, during the 2011 or thereabouts. And so those things kind of conspired, both with Tim Johnson's retirement, the end of earmarks, and Congress just sort of 30 years of this project moving on to other priorities and forgetting about it. It just sort of petered out at the end, and a bunch of things didn't get done.
All right, so let's talk about what got done and what got left undone, specifically because who's served and who is not served then by Minnewachoni.
So they built the core pipeline, and that was a success. I mean, that's one of the reasons it's kind of a subtle story, is they did build the pipeline. There is water flowing through that pipeline. But in the early years of the project, the engineers working on it realized that, wow, with all the entities we've now included in this, besides Pine Ridge, if we build the pipeline big enough from the river to serve all of these entities, it's going to be way too expensive. So they decided to get half of the water for Pine Ridge from ground wells, and they ended up doing that. So that's why today Pine Ridge only gets 50% roughly of its water from the Missouri River, even though a $500 million pipeline was built across 200 miles to bring them Missouri River water. A couple other things weren't finished. That pipeline water on the reservations, when you go into the towns and cities and communities on the reservations, that pipeline water, that new pipeline water, is flowing into old community distribution pipes that in some cases date to the 1960s, and in some cases the pipes are constructed of asbestos cement, which was formerly a common material for pipe construction. We now know asbestos is a carcinogen, potentially cancer causing. And it's believed those pipes are safe, but the problem is if those pipes break up, it can release asbestos into the atmosphere. And so all of those community systems were supposed to have been replaced by the Minnewachoni project, and none of them were, as time dragged on and the project sort of ground to a halt. And a few years ago, the Bureau of Reclamation estimated it would cost $42 million to replace all of these community systems. I think there was 53 of them spread across three reservations. So that never got done, and there are efforts to do that now, and they're working on getting federal funding for that, but it was supposed to have been done, wasn't. And then another thing that was never done was they were supposed to build out some a broad network of livestock watering to benefit cattle producers on the reservations. And that was just abandoned as the money ran out at the end of the project and never got done. And again, there are some efforts now to try to get some federal funding to do that. And there's been a couple of small projects done, but not to the extent it was intended.
And what about the Lyman Jones West River system? How does that look today?
And that's completely finished. They were able to, sort of two different worlds, obviously. West River Lyman Jones is dealing with largely white communities and largely white ranchers in their communities and their rural areas who have a much higher per capita income and were able to simply, pay fees to be a member of this water system and fund, distribution pipes and the like. And fund their own connections to their own homes and businesses and communities and things like that. Whereas on Pine Ridge, you get a lot of people with a lot lower per capita income, a lot more poverty, who weren't able to fund their own connections to their own homes or their own communities and were really relying on the government to do things that just in the end didn't get done to the extent they were supposed to. So you have a real disparate outcome there between the largely white population who gets water from this pipeline and the native population.
And what did you find, because it occurs, it's pretty evident that if you spend a certain part of your day trying to figure out how to get water in your house, that's not going to contribute to your upward mobility from an economic standpoint. It's a cycle, isn't it? What did you find about people who didn't have water or who had substandard water, and how that feeds on itself?
Exactly. That had been a problem for obviously for decades on Pine Ridge and other reservations was, if you have to figure out, can I get water trucked in? And if I do, can I afford it? Can I buy a cistern? Can I, that's things you have to spend your time thinking about rather than, getting employed or anything else you could be thinking about. So it's really is one of the factors that, that contributes to keeping people in poverty. And, you know, even now on Pine Ridge, they deal with problems like in the actual city of Pine Ridge on the reservation. They have a very old and outdated and worn out community water distribution system that officials down there told me when there's a leak in one place, they end up having to shut down the entire town because the system is so outdated. Well, that's something, that whole system was supposed to have been replaced by the Miniwichoni Project. It wasn't. So now they have to spend their time dealing with things like that instead of, you know, perhaps working on other things, whether that be, you know, economic development or whatever. So, you know, obviously we know on Pine Ridge that the causes of poverty are many and varied, but this is historically has been one of those things that basic need that maybe those of us who live off the reservation take for granted. We just open the tap and it's there and we pay our water bill, whereas it's something they've had to deal with continually for decades on end to secure a reliable, adequate source of water.
Yep. The story is not over. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest, Dakota political junkie and Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter Seth Tupper. We've been talking about the Miniwichoni Project. You can read his piece on that at rapidcityjournal.com. It was also originally published in The Guardian, and it's part of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. If you're interested in that topic, you can find much more work on that online. And Seth, let's talk a little bit about some other news coming out of Rapid City and Pennington County. And in Rapid City, Mayor Steve Allender wins re-election, third term in office, and now the first mayor to serve a four-year term. Tell us a little bit about the transition in Rapid City politics now.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, our Matthew Gary at the Rapid City Journal did all the reporting on this race and did a good job. There's a lot of coverage on our website, rapidcityjournal.com, you can read. But, you know, my perspective on this was, you know, our mayor, Allender, is probably forever going to be linked to the new arena that is going to be built in Rapid City. They're scheduled to break ground on it this fall. During his first two terms, that was a real singular focus of his was getting that project off the ground and getting it approved, and he was successful in that. So whenever he's up for election, I tend to think of it as sort of a referendum on his arena efforts, and he won by 75% of the vote yesterday. So that was a strong endorsement for him, even though it was only 19% turnout, which, you know, is not great. I think he's going to probably take that as a sign that generally people agree with his push for the arena. He's also had a lot of focus on economic development and support for an effort called Elevate Rapid City, which is a sort of a widespread effort to bring the different economic development and business promotion efforts in Rapid City under one umbrella, sort of like Forward Sioux Falls, you know, has done over there. And so I think it was kind of a referendum on that and on those efforts, and I think you have to take from it that, for the most part, people are pleased with the way those things are going.
And interestingly, this is also a time to look at some of the people who didn't win, because there was a historic slate of candidates in Native American women coming out and seeking office. What did some of them have to say about what's next? Because they're not seeing this necessarily as a major defeat that would make you be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a slate of Native American women that ran in the city council races, and also Mayor Allender's opponent was Natalie States Means, a Native American woman. And I haven't seen that they made any decisions about the future, but I did see that Ms. Means was positive about this being a good step to have Native American women on the ballot, which isn't, you know, typical in Rapid City, even though we do have a very significant portion of our city is Native American residents. So, you know, I think they felt good that they got on the ballot and they got their message out there. The real question now will be, you know, what happens the next few elections? Is this going to be a sustained effort? As we know, if you're a minority group, either, you know, minority political group or a minority racial, ethnic, whatever, to crack into elected office, it may take, you know, several attempts. And so I guess that's what I'll be interested to see going forward is, are they going to be able to sustain this and field more additional candidates and sort of build on the momentum from this time? Or will this be a one-off thing that we don't see again?
Hmm. All right. And let's talk a little bit about flooding in Pennington County, because it's time for some of those tallies to start coming in across the state as people were trying to figure out what the overall damage is. What's the story from Rapid City and Pennington County area?
Yeah, we're all sort of in a daze. I mean, you know, you've heard a lot, of course, in here, everybody's familiar with the flood of 1972 that tragically killed a couple hundred people in Rapid City. And you hear people around town now talking about, you know, this is the most water that they've seen since then. And that's how just how significant the flooding has been. And I think we're still trying to take stock of it. But I was at a county commission meeting yesterday for the Pennington County Commission where there were some numbers shared. And our emergency manager, Dustin Willett, was saying that there are indications that the ground to a depth of 4 to 5 feet is 100% saturated, meaning there's no capacity for the ground to absorb even one more drop of water. And we've seen that, and that means that all that water is running off into drainages and creeks and streams. And he shared that Pactola, I haven't looked at the numbers today, but as of yesterday, Pactola Reservoir was within a foot of its record elevation and was still rising. Pennington County, during the week of May 21st to 28th, had to close 36 roads temporarily that were affected by flooding. There were pictures shared yesterday of a rural road, gravel road, in the northeast part of the county that was affected by a landslide that half of the road dropped off and fell down an estimated roughly 30 feet. And so we've seen just impacts like that all over the county. And we have had now, we had a brief passing thunderstorm yesterday, but a lot of sun. It's sunny again today, so we're all just kind of hoping we get some relief from the constant rain showers that we've been and thunderstorms that we've been affected by.
It looks like a wet and cold forecast, though, a little bit. Good news for the fire outlook and bad news for the saturated earth there.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, yeah. That's been, I guess, the silver lining is, yeah, we certainly haven't had to worry about forest fires this spring.
Seth Tupper, you can find his work at rapidcityjournal.com. Seth, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.